I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Do you trust the federal government with facial recognition technology? Do you? I mean, I know it's a rhetorical question. I know the answer to that. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. Our fourth and final hour on a Friday night. Almost ready for the weekend. Excited for the weekend. And wow, it's almost Halloween. And yes, Election Day too. There's that too. Big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanari of VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. The GSA, which is the General Services Administration, which controls the public's access to government services, is introducing new facial identification technology that has Republican lawmakers concerned about the privacy of their constituents. Isn't it interesting how only Republicans are concerned about this and Democrats are not? It shows you that the Republican Party has become the party of civil liberties and the Democrat Party just has completely abandoned them. I mean, their war on freedom of speech, their war on your ability to say whatever you want on social media, their war, literally war against Elon Musk, for example. The GSA's login.gov, which describes itself as the front door to the federal government, announced earlier this month that users will now have the option of uploading a selfie to confirm their identity. They say, quote, proving your identity is a crucial step in receiving many government benefits and services, and we want to ensure we are making that as easy and secure as possible for members of the public while protecting against identity theft and fraud. Login.gov's new IAL2 compliant product offering is another milestone in ensuring agencies have a wide variety of strong identity verification options. Login.gov employs technology to ensure that the live selfie matches a user-provided photo ID and stresses that the image's use is solely confined to verifying a user's identity. Okay? Login.gov heard from our agency partners with higher-risk use cases that it was important that we offer a version of our strong identity verification system that is IAL2 certified. We're glad we've been able to do this while ensuring that users continue to have multiple secure pathways to verify their identity, whether that is in person or remote. Looking ahead, we will continue to uphold our values of equity, privacy, and transparency by incorporating best-in-class technology and learning from academic and user research. While the GSA insists their agency can be trusted with sensitive data, the recent track record is unlikely to inspire confidence among privacy-minded Americans. In March of 2023, the GSA Inspector General released a report concluding that the GSA had misled their customer agencies in part by failing to maintain adequate security controls around login.gov, which was operated under a hands-off culture. Despite the issues documented by the IG, the site currently serves over 50 federal and state agencies, 500 applications, and 300 million annual sign-ins. Despite the many advantages of facial recognition technology, its trustworthiness has long been questioned, particularly as it relates to personal privacy issues. That was said by three sitting committee representatives in a letter addressed to the National Institute of Standards and Technology. There have also been concerns raised about the accuracy of face recognition technology and the use of biometrics to authenticate a user. Citing a January report from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, the Republican lawmakers raised several concerns about the potential for the federal government to abuse the new technology to invade Americans' privacy. Quote, when applied broadly and without safeguards, the technology can allow repressive regimes to create detailed records of people's movements and activities and block targeted individuals from participation in public life. That's from a report from the National Academies of Sciences. With few exceptions, the U.S. does not currently have authoritative guidance, regulations, or laws to adequately address issues related to facial recognition technology use. Authoritarian governments, most prominently the Chinese Communist Party, use facial recognition technology to surveil and oppress their citizens. These technologies are deployed in service of a dystopian vision for technology governance that harnesses the economic benefits of the internet in the absence of political freedom and sees technology companies as instruments of state power. That was said by a bipartisan group of 17 senators in a letter to then Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in 2020. Vladimir Putin's Russia similarly employs facial recognition technology to surveil protesters, opposition figures, and military draft dodgers. The Kremlin actively exports speech and facial recognition technologies to foreign governments, according to the Center for European Policy Analysis. The U.S. Commission on Civil Rights released a report last month underscoring the potential dangers of such technology, including there are no current laws that explicitly regulate facial recognition systems or any other variation of artificial intelligence by the federal government. So I guess the question I have for you is, do you trust the federal government, this government, with facial recognition technology? Now, obviously, if Donald Trump wins and we have civil-minded Republicans, it's one thing, but I still don't trust the government, so I would not want them to do it anyway. I don't care who's president because they won't be president forever, and this is how the creeping authoritarianism exists. And it's the same reason why I oppose age verification for the internet, because they will know your identity and you won't be able to be anonymous online criticizing your government, which is a foundational fundamental First Amendment freedom. Now, National Review in 2016 did an issue. It was the Never Trump issue. Very famous issue of National Review. Many prominent conservative writers, who all now pretend like they didn't write articles for that, all wrote articles about why Donald Trump should never be the Republican nominee. But just to show you how far things have come, National Review's editor-in-chief Rich Lowry has a piece today, No, Trump is not a fascist. Kamala Harris has officially ended the joy phase of her campaign and has instead entered the Trump is a fascist stage. Asked at a CNN town hall whether she thinks Donald Trump is a fascist, Harris said, yes, I do. The F word is one of the less favorite smear words, and applying it to Trump must be emotionally satisfying, whether it makes sense on the merits or politically. Until now, Harris has tended to make a case against Trump as a standard Republican who caters to the needs of the wealthy. Now she's portraying him as an American Mussolini. The occasion for Harris's new attack is former Trump chief of staff John Kelly telling the New York Times that Trump meets the definition of a fascist, and his former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, maintaining, according to Bob Woodward, that Trump is fascistic to the core. These are serious men who once held positions of serious responsibility, but that doesn't mean that their ideological taxonomy should be accepted. And just so you know, that the media again is going all in on this nonsense, all in on this nonsense of saying that Trump is a fascist. And once again, they're doing exactly what they're always doing. Obsessed with this. This is from Newsbusters, deranged networks, still obsessed with Trump as a fascist and John Kelly's reports. CBS's Nancy Cordes admits Harris and former Trump aides wanting an election about January 6th and Trump being a fascist / Hitler enthusiast has been kind of drowning out the policy conversation. And she adds that Democrats aren't giving people reasons to vote for them, only against Trump, which Harris again did earlier today before I came on the air.
We have this larger conversation going on now about just how wedded Donald Trump is to the democratic process in the first place. He suggested just this week in an interview that all the battleground states may have cheated in elections. You've got former top aides coming forward to warn that he's drawn to fascism. He's musing on the campaign trail about using the military to go after the enemy within. And so all of that is kind of drowning out the policy conversation right now.
So, Nancy, you know, we're getting down to the nitty and the gritty here, and both campaigns are talking about making their closing arguments. But here's a question. Do you think this has become more about voting against the other person rather than voting for the candidate you want?
Yes.
Absolutely, Gail. I mean, let's just take the Harris campaign, which I cover day to day. Not only is Harris spending a great deal of time warning people about Trump in these closing weeks, but so are her top surrogates on the campaign trail, like former President Obama, who has been dedicating most of the time in his speeches to mocking and criticizing Trump. And yes, Trump is giving them a lot of new material to work with, but the challenge for the Harris campaign is that candidates tend to generate excitement and win when voters view them as the candidate of change. That was certainly the case for Obama back in 08. And if you're really focused on defining your opponent, that leaves you with less time to define yourself. And so that's the balancing act, and the Harris campaign is acutely aware of that.
Well, let's think about this for a second. The similar vibes between Hillary Clinton's campaign and Kamala Harris's campaign, even down to the fact that fake farmer Bruce Springsteen is going to be on the campaign trail doing concerts for her, which is exactly what Hillary Clinton had in 2016. And the vibes of these two back and forth, screaming and yelling. Trump War Room actually put out a side-by-side piece on this, and it's a little bit nauseating to hear. I'm just going to apologize in advance for just kind of playing this for you, but it's the two of them side by side screaming, never again, never again, never again, never again. And it just shows you the vibes that they have and how similar these two races are. It's not a race saying vote for me. It is a race saying vote against him. Oof, this is cringeworthy. I'm sorry, but
sick and tired of the negative, dark, divisive, dangerous vision and behavior of people who support Donald Trump. It is time for us to say no. We are not going backwards. We're going forward.
Oof, brutal, right? Brutal. Back to the media again with their obsession about Donald Trump being fascistic. But before I get to that, let me just go back to Rich Lowry's point. Again, this is a guy who led the Never Trump issue at one point. The occasion for Harris's new attack on Trump, I mentioned that part. As I wrote in my book, The Case for Nationalism, 20th century fascists hated parliamentary democracy. They believed in an all-consuming state and had contempt for bourgeois life. Fundamentally, fascism celebrated violence in a nihilistic rejection of rationality and elevation of military struggle. As for Hitler, he believed in an existential fight between the species, a conflict that the German race would wage in a war of annihilation against inferior peoples. Trump says crude and unworthy things and behaved abysmally after the 2020 election, he writes, but the idea that he bears any meaningful resemblance to these cracked movements is a stupid smear. Obviously, Trump isn't deploying a paramilitary wing of the GOP to clash with his enemies on the streets. Rather than pursuing the classic fascist objective of territorial aggrandizement through conquest, he inveighs against his party's own military hawks. Well, that's why the Cheneys are against him. In his first term, he appointed constitutionalist judges, reduced the power of the federal government, extolled free enterprise, and proved a profound friend of the Jewish state. Instead of pursuing a politics of racial purity, he is now trying to build a more multiracial political coalition, bragging about the fact that he's getting more black voters and Latino voters. The indictment against Trump as a budding fascist often relies on distortions. He said in an interview that he wouldn't be a dictator except for day one, a joke referring to executive actions he'd undertake the first day. This has become Trump supposedly pledging to become a dictator beginning on day one. And that's because people of low intelligence or people of high intelligence are deliberately taking this out of context. They're doing this on purpose, obviously. He has said the National Guard or military could be deployed to quell election-related unrest in the streets if he wins. This has become Trump threatening to use troops to go after his political enemies, as if he's talking about the 101st Airborne arresting Democratic senators. Fascism is not an indigenous American phenomenon, whereas Trump, to use Milley's phrase, is American to his core. For better or worse, he is a Jacksonian figure with the same populist appeal, emphasis on strength, combativeness, opposition to the elite, insistence on loyalty, and willfulness. As an Andrew Jackson biographer noted, Old Hickory believed the country was being controlled by a kind of congressional financial bureaucratic complex in which the needs and concerns of the unconnected were secondary to those who were on the inside. He reflexively resorted to the language of combat and engendered a fierce resistance to his rule among those who dubbed him King Andrew. And let's not, of course, forget the fact that the guy tried to assassinate him and Andrew Jackson beat the crap out of a guy with the cane, which I loved. Guy tries to shoot him. The gun misfired twice. Jackson beat the man, went medieval on him with a cane, which I love that. Placing Trump within this tradition doesn't make for a fevered closing argument, though. It is not clear that the Harris message will appeal to its intended audience of fence-sitting Republicans disaffected by Trump. By this point, Republicans are very used to their standard bearers being called fascists. George W. Bush, a Bible-believing Christian, was committed to spreading democracy around the world, saved countless lives in Africa, and he was called a fascist too. In the campaign's final days, whatever joy is produced by the Harris campaign will have to be derived from the revival and elevation of this tiresome charge. Let me also mention to you as well that not only is this drowning out the arguments by the Kamala Harris campaign, CBS's Mornings co-host Adriana Diaz starts off a discussion of the Latinos flocking in greater numbers to Trump by wondering how they're doing this. How could this be possible?
When Donald Trump came down that escalator 9 years ago and referred to Mexican immigrants as, quote, rapists and drug dealers, you wouldn't be crazy for assuming that his path to Latino votes would be quite the uphill climb. But the Latino voting bloc isn't a monolithic bloc at all. And now, in yet another campaign full of anti-immigrant rhetoric, Latino Trump voters might actually swing this election. By the way, this shouldn't be surprising. Yes, Democrats still take a majority of the Latino vote. In 2016, they won about 68% of Hispanic voters, according to the New York Times. But Democratic support among Latinos.
Democratic support among Latinos is crushing. They can't figure this out. They can't understand that Latinos are people who are very socially conservative and people who believe to their core that the illegal immigration crisis in this country needs to be stopped. That crime is out of control. And by the way, they're also huge proponents of school choice. All the things Donald Trump talks about on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of the victims of illegal immigrant crime are Latinos. But the left, they can't figure this out. Harris's argument that Donald Trump is a fascist in the final days, the closing arguments here, is drowning out the message. And the reason why is because she has no message. She has no message. Whereas Trump is making a great point on illegal immigration in the final days and saying, we're going to fix what they broke. But Kamala Harris, even in her closing arguments, doubling down on the horrific rhetoric against Trump.
Mitch McConnell and Speaker Mike Johnson put out a statement comparing rhetoric that you have been using, comparing it to the man who's accused of an attempted assassination on your opponent, Donald Trump. Do you take their criticism seriously?
Well, listen, we all must speak out against any form of political violence, and I'm very clear about that. No one should be the subject of violence, much less political violence. But the American people deserve to be presented with facts and the truth. And the fact and the truth is that some of the people closest to Donald Trump when he was president, generals, including most recently John Kelly, a four-star Marine general, have been very clear about the danger and the threat that Donald Trump poses to America.
But why wasn't he a danger and a threat to America in his first term? Huh? Why don't you focus more on the economy? That was a question that a reporter asked Kamala Harris today. You know what her answer was?
What do you say to those people, especially ones who might be concerned that, you know, doing a big closing argument speech at a place like the Ellipse, maybe leaning more into talking about the threat of Trump to democracy and not his threats that you see to the economy?
One of the things that I love about the American people is we can hold many thoughts at once. And one of the highest priorities for the American people right now is bringing down cost, and that is the priority of my agenda and will be the priority of my work when I'm elected president of the United
States. It's not an answer. It's not an answer. And to Nancy Cordes's point, it is drowning out your message. It is drowning out your message. And just so you, I mean, just so you understand how offensive this is, the ad that I played earlier in the show today, that Holocaust survivor who's offended by these comparisons to Hitler, this is not helping them win over undecided voters. Whereas Trump's closing argument today, Trump's closing arguments is exactly on message in the final moments of this campaign, without question.
But today, Kamala is here in Texas to rub shoulders with woke celebrities. Isn't that exciting? But she's not going to meet with any of the victims of migrant crime while she's here. We have many of them right here, the families, we have many of them. And they're incredible people, what they've gone through, the hell that they've gone through. And will continue to go through, unfortunately. She'll not speak to the grieving mothers from whom she has stolen the brightest light in their life. She was in charge of this border, and she doesn't like being called border czar anymore. She didn't mind it almost 4 years ago, but now she doesn't like it. But you don't need that term. She was in charge of the border. She never came here, and she never made one call to these people behind me or anybody in the group. Not one call. She's in charge. She deals with Border Patrol. She hasn't made, Paul, not even... not one call in 4 years.
Shameful. Shameful. All right, more to come in our fourth and final hour on a Friday night. Hope the pizza's on the way. And I'll tell you something. I'm ready to fire up my oven. I don't know about you. We're coming right back.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
So the Trump campaign is focusing on low propensity voters in Pennsylvania. That is going to be their strategy to try to win the great state of Pennsylvania. I'll be on Fox News on Sunday, 1 o'clock, like that. I'm not exactly sure when, but I'll text it out when I know for sure. But I'll be talking to Mike Emanuel about the state of the race in Pennsylvania on Fox News. I'm excited for that. And here's how I look at it right now. Low propensity voters, who are the voters that are not the 4 out of 4 voters. It's the 2 out of 4 voters. It's the ones that they're not wearing MAGA hats, obviously. Getting those voters out, getting them with a ballot in their hand, getting them registered, all those things. That's what we're talking about here in the final hours of this campaign, which is almost over. Trump's closing argument is that Kamala Harris broke it. Kamala Harris broke it, and we're going to fix it. And as I was mentioning in the earlier segment, you know, her closing argument about Trump being a fascist, it's not going over well. It's really not. In case you didn't hear the ad, I played it earlier in the show today. But this Holocaust survivor, this new ad that was put out by the Trump campaign is really excellent. And it's the kind of thing here that it's just, you know, it gives you chills. An Auschwitz survivor by the name of Jerry Wartsky ripping Kamala Harris for calling President Trump a fascist. Listen to this incredible ad by the Trump campaign. Man comes
My
and sits down.
My name is Jerry Wartsky. I'm 94 years old and survivor of Auschwitz and the death marches. Adolf Hitler invaded Poland when I was 9 years old. He murdered my parents and most of our family. I know more about Hitler than Kamala will ever know in 1,000 lifetimes. For her to accuse President Trump of being like Hitler is the worst thing I've ever heard in my 75 years living in the United States. I know President Trump, and he would never say this, and Kamala Harris knows it. This. She owes my parents and everybody else who was murdered by Hitler an apology for repeating this lie.
Why should the Jewish people support President Trump?
Because he's a mensch. I believe that President Trump is definitely going to be good for Israel, because in everything that he's done up to now was in favor. He never double-crossed anyone, and he never showed any weakness. Watching President Trump pray for the hostages at the Ohel and getting to spend time with him so meaningful. He has always stood with the Jewish people and the state of Israel.
It's a phenomenal ad. It's a phenomenal ad. It gives you chills, doesn't it? And it shows you why this argument is so disgusting by Kamala Harris to compare him to Adolf Hitler. It's disgusting. Disgusting. But it's also not working, too. It's not working. And that's the good thing. I mean, it's a good thing because it's beyond shameful that that in the closing arguments, they're back to doing what Hillary Clinton was doing in 2016, which is that Trump is Nazi, Trump is Hitler, Trump's going to destroy the world. Versus what Trump is saying in his final hours when he says, we're going to frack, and we're going to drill, baby, drill.
But we will quickly become energy independent again. We were energy independent 4 years ago. And we will frack, and drill, baby, drill, right? We're gonna drill. And I'm gonna cut your energy bill in half within, think of this, within 12 months, 50% you're gonna have it down. And the reason we can do it is we got that liquid gold. We don't know what to do with it. We have so much, we don't use it. And you know what? When that comes down, because that's what led it up, that and their stupid spending. But the energy is what led it up. They're paying a fortune for energy. We have it under the ground. We're going to use our energy. Your energy bills from January 20th, when we take office, will be down 50% within 12 months, and everything else will follow. To make housing more affordable, we will open up portions of federal land, which is what you've wanted here so badly. And your governor's doing a good job, by the way. We thank him very much, Joe Lombardo. Doing a very good job. For large-scale housing construction in those zones, we'll have ultra-low taxes and low regulations to help bring back jobs and factories from foreign lands. We have our jobs going to foreign lands.
I think the frack, drill, baby, drill, that's the message. That's the message right there. That's the message. I think Biden would be doing a better job right now, even though the guy can't speak. I really do.
By the way, the infrastructure bill is over $1 trillion. It's not a decade. I mean, it's just not a quarter. It's going to be there for a decade. Much, much more to come, and you've got to get your fair share. By authorizing the Violence Against Women Act, an act I took great pains in writing 30 years ago. We also reaffirmed tribal sovereignty, expanded tribal jurisdiction in cases where outside predators harm members of your nation.
It sounds like me after I do Saturday, Fox News Saturday Night with Fela, and we go to the bar and we're just drinking till 4 a.m. That's what it sounds like. Except I don't make jokes about my wife being a whore.
It's been 10 years since the city president came and visited Indian country. That's simply much too long.
What?
That's why I'm here today. Not only to fulfill my promise to be president and first president to visit Indian country, but more importantly, to right a wrong, to chart a new path toward a better future for us all. I'm also here today because, as I said, my wife Jill has been here 10 times in the Indian country, literally. The First Lady sends her love and said, Joe, make sure you come home. Because every time she goes, she spent a lot of time, excuse me for saying this, the Navajo Nation. I'm worried. Every time she goes, I'm worried she's not coming home.
Yeah, you know, she's seen more than Indian. She's more than Indian chief. That's all. No big deal. Just have a little fun with an Indian chief. No big deal. Just among friends. You know what I mean? Just among friends. That is. That's all. Oh man. The slurring of the words. No joke. That's no joke, folks. Mashima. Obviously, as we are talking about all these things today, why, Kamala Harris, why do you keep belittling our country? Why? You say Donald Trump belittles our country. That's her argument. Donald Trump belittles our country. Kamala Harris goes out there and says the guy praises Hitler. He was president of the United States of America. So by you implying that a president, a former president, is Hitlerian, is a fascist, what does that say about the American people who elected him? Nobody puts it in that context but me, because I have a great way of looking at things, obviously. Donald Trump doesn't belittle our country. Donald Trump builds up our country. That's why people love him. But to imply that the American people elected a fascist, that a Hitler-loving fascist was elected by the American people, what does that say about the American people? Does no one ever bring that up but me? Here she is saying it again today.
I also do want to address the comment that Donald Trump made about America being the trash can of the world, whatever he said, something along those lines. You know, it's just another example of how he really belittles our country. This is someone who is a former president of the United States who has a bully pulpit. And this is how he uses it, to tell the rest of the world that somehow the United States of America is trash. And I think, again, the president of the United States should be someone who elevates discourse and talks about the best of who we are and invest in the best of who we are.
Elevates discourse?
Not someone like Donald Trump, who is constantly demeaning and belittling who the American people are. America deserves better.
Elevates discourse by calling the guy Hitler? You think that elevates discourse? You know, the Washington Post did not endorse anybody for president, which is huge. And they're furious. People at the Washington Post are furious about this. And the editor-at-large, Robert Kagan, resigned from the Washington Post today following the decision not to endorse in the presidential race. Isn't that something? Washington Post, the LA Times, these papers not endorsing Kamala Harris says a lot, does it not? It says a lot. But I don't know. If Biden was running, maybe he'd have a better chance. It's possible. It's very, very possible.
And to the Hela Indian River community, the Hela, nothing wrong with me.
It's very, very possible. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
And to the Hela Indian River community, the Hela, nothing wrong with me.
Can you say that you were honest with the American people about what you saw in those moments with President Biden as you were with him again and again, repeatedly in that time?
Of course. Joe Biden is an extremely accomplished, experienced, and capable in every way that anyone would want if they're president.
And you never saw anything like what happened at the debate night behind closed doors with him?
It was a bad debate. People have bad debates. He is absolutely...
But that's the reason why you're here, and he's not running for the top of the ticket.
Well, you'd have to ask him if that's the only reason why.
What do you think?
I am running for president of the United States. I speak with not only sincerity, but with a real firsthand account of watching him do this work. I have no reluctance in saying that. No, of course I don't.
Oh, by the way, her surrogates are also out there saying that Trump is Hitler, too. Like Hillary Clinton, of course. The basket of deplorables has now expanded in a big, big way. And the rally at Madison Square Garden, which you may have seen the likes of, I don't know, Billy Joel playing at Madison Square Garden. Or maybe you've seen Andrea Bocelli playing at Madison Square Garden. Or maybe you just watched, I don't know, I'm sure probably Taylor Swift has played at Madison Square Garden. I don't know. But it's really, it's a Bund Camp. It's a German Bund Camp. It's a fascistic rally, just so you understand.
And you know, one other thing that you'll see next week, Caitlin, is Trump actually reenacting the Madison Square Garden rally in 1939. I write about this in my book.
Oh.
President Franklin Roosevelt was appalled that neo-Nazis, fascists in America were lining up to essentially pledge their support for the kind of government that they were seeing in Germany.
And that's going to be at Madison Square Garden next week. I wonder, will they be eating pretzels and popcorn too at Madison Square Garden next week? That's what I'm just wondering. I'm asking the question. I'm asking the question. I really got to wonder if Biden would be better. Don't you at this point got to wonder if Biden would be better than Hillary Clinton? All right. So last thing I got to mention is this big story today. Lancaster County, PA, Lancaster County, the district attorney out there, voter registration fraud probe. It appears to be an organized effort. It's a big, big deal. I'm going to talk about that with you before we close out the show. Don't go away.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Voter fraud in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, a major voter registration fraud uncovered. Welcome back. It is almost the end of our time together this week. Hey, great week. And thanks for streaming on YouTube all week, too, with us. We appreciate it very, very much. Mark your calendar December 20th, our next time at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. And November 13th, hold the date. And hopefully I can tell you why next week, but definitely hold the date. All right. It's very, very important to do. This is a groundbreaking big deal out of Lancaster. I want to play for you a little bit of the press conference today of what they announced and what they found. It's a little bit long, but look, this is very, very important stuff here, and I don't want to just gloss over this, even though it's Friday night. Here we go.
Who is our chief clerk of elections regarding potentially fraudulent voter registration applications that had recently been received by her office. At that time, she informed me that the elections office received approximately 2,500 applications at or near the deadline for registering to vote. While preparing to process these applications, staff noticed that numerous applications appeared to have the same handwriting, were filled out on the same day with unknown signatures, and some were previously registered voters, excuse me, and the signatures on file did not match the signatures on the application. So before I begin to summarize our preliminary findings, I must remind everyone that this is an ongoing investigation, and for that reason, I will be limited in the details that I can provide. Lancaster County detectives began investigating the voter registration applications and immediately found applications that were indeed fraudulent. Indicators of fraud included inaccuracies with the addresses listed on the applications, false personal identification information, as well as false names. A number of the applications also contained names that did not match the provided Social Security information. In some cases, applications contained correct personal identification information, such as the correct address, correct phone number, date of birth, driver's license number, and Social Security number. But the individuals listed on the applications informed detectives that they did not request the form, they did not complete the form, and verified that the signature on the form was not theirs. At this point, it is believed that the fraudulent voter registrations are connected to a large-scale canvassing operations for voter registrations that date back to June. However, the majority of the applications received are dated August 15th and after. Those canvassing for voter registrations were employed and paid to obtain voter registration applications. The majority of the applications were from residents in the city of Lancaster. However, applications were also received from residents in Columbia, Elizabethtown, Mountjoy, Akron, Ephrata, Stevens, Strasburg, as well as other locations across Lancaster County.
I know what you're thinking. How come none of the cool towns with the fun, sexy names? I don't know. This is a big deal. All right. And this is the district attorney, Heather Adams, here in Lancaster County. Major investigation here into this voter registration fraud. Oh, by the way, I want to mention there's a ruling that came out today a short time ago, very, very short time ago. I think it came out. Oh, what time is this ruling? I mean, just happened in the last hour or so. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals delivers critical ruling that affects mail-in ballots. All ballots must now be received by Election Day in order to be counted. U.S. Court of Appeals decision overrides state laws permitting post-election day ballot counting, affirming that federal law mandates the deadline. Judge Andrew S. Oldham stated, the day for the election is when ballots must be both cast and received by state officials. The ruling directly impacts Mississippi's previous policy, which allowed ballots to be counted for up to 5 days after election day. This sets a clear precedent for election integrity and increases pressure on states to adhere strictly to the standards as the 2024 election approaches. As Justice Kavanaugh summarized in a separate Supreme Court case, to state the obvious, a state cannot conduct an election without deadlines. A deadline is not unconstitutional merely because of voters' own failures to take timely steps to ensure their franchise. Which I agree with, by the way. It's no different than if you get to the polling location at 8:05 and it closes at 8, and you pound on the door and you go, I demand you let me in to vote. They go, no, the polling closed at 8. Well, it doesn't matter. I'm late. You've got to accommodate me. How's it any different? And of course, in Pennsylvania, this is near and dear to our hearts because in the 2020 election, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said it changed the time, manner, and place of the election. It overrode the legislature. And it said, we're going to allow ballots to be counted up until Friday. Doesn't matter the postmark date. Doesn't matter if it has a postmark, despite what Pennsylvania law said. That's why the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, you want to talk about election interference, you want to talk about cheating? The Pennsylvania Supreme Court, there's no controversy with this. That's exactly what they did, 100%. Back to the Lancaster investigation for a quick moment here.
The canvasses themselves took place at various shopping centers, parking lots of grocery stores and businesses, sidewalks, and parks. During this preliminary investigation, detectives were able to verify some of the applications were indeed legitimate. In these instances, the applicant verified that they did provide information to a canvasser. For these applications, we will immediately advise voter registration and that we confirm that they are legitimate requests, and voter registration will process that application. Thus far, of the investigations that we have completed, we have determined that 60% have been fraudulent. That is of the investigations that we've completed. We do have more to do today, and my understanding is that voter registration is still going through the box of 2,500, but should be completed sometime here today.
I'm glad this district attorney is all over this. It's a big deal. We'll have a big follow-up, obviously, next week on this, but... You know, I the only thing I can tell you is the RNC, my buddy Linda Kearns, we're all over this stuff, but they are not going to stop cheating. They will try to cheat, no question about it. Go ahead, a little bit more.
As I said, the investigation is ongoing. We are aware of at least two other counties that receive similar applications that are currently being investigated. At this point, we have confirmed violation of our crimes code as well as our elections code. We have all available detectives working on this. We are all hands on deck so that we can properly assess the validity of these applications in a timely manner. If needed, we will request additional assistance from our local police departments. The message to the public is this, and this is a limited message to those who may have been impacted with this batch of 2,500. If you have reason to believe that your personal information was used on a voter registration application, without your consent, or if you were approached by someone and asked to register under suspicious circumstances, we do want to hear from you. You can call the Lancaster County District Attorney's Office, 299-8100, and ask to speak to the on-call detective.
Good for the DA for being all over this, and to the police, too, as well. All right, listen, have a great weekend. Enjoy it. Before I get out of here, I want to thank my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, for being a great friend of the show. VeneriaDental.com, 856-786-2020 is his number. He is the master of dental implants, the master of making you look and feel your best with that beautiful smile. And I want to invite you to his Veterans Breakfast coming up on Saturday, November 9th at his Cinnaminson location. Breakfast, coffee, donuts, and thank our veterans and bring those documents that you need shredded because your personal identity is critically important, all right? VeneriaDental.com. And when it comes to dental implants, there's simply no one better. So make your appointment today for a free implant consultation by calling 856-786-2020 or visit him at VeneriaDental.com. Remember, he's my dentist. my family's dentist, and for 12 years recognized among his peers as the best there is. Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.